Hello and welcome to another episode of the Gridiron Buzz podcast. I want to welcome everybody back after a short break. We got some news to report. We got some spring games to cover, some highlights to cover, and we've got, yes, more arrest throughout the college football world. We're going to start off with Northwestern. Northwestern announcing that they will play most of their home games next season on their lakefront property while their new stadium is being built. Northwestern will play the majority of its home games next season at its lakefront soccer and lacrosse facility while a new Ryan Field is being constructed on the site of the old stadium. The school announced this week they plan to install a temporary structure at the soccer and lacrosse field that will remain in place through the 2025 season. And the school said that the capacity of that temporary field has yet to be determined. They don't know exactly how many people they'll be able to fit in that temporary stadium, but it will be considerably lower than the old Ryan Field and the new stadium. So capacity there will be greatly impacted. I'd like to see how that affects ticket prices at Northwestern games. They have non-conference home games next season against Miami of Ohio on August 31st, Duke on September 7th, and Eastern Illinois on September 14th, and they are scheduled to host Big Ten opponents Indiana, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and Illinois. Now, they are in discussions with other Chicago areas to host games for some of the games that will require more capacity, like the Ohio State game. I'm sure will need much better capacity than a temporary structural soccer field. They have hosted games. They have played games at Wrigley Field in the past. They played there three times since 2010, including losing to Iowa last year on a last second field goal. Northwestern president Michael Schill says that he is thrilled that we can make this happen. It's truly a win for our community, in addition to creating a wonderful fan experience in the lead up to the opening of Ryan Field. Hosting games on campus will reduce the travel burdens of our student athletes and fans, and will make games much more accessible. We are also pleased to keep the economic benefits of football game days in Evanston. The new Ryan Field is part of a $480 million donation from the family of Patrick and Shirley Ryan that was the largest in school history. Some of that money is also funding academic ventures. The school has said that the stadium would seat 35,000, which is down more than 12,000 from the current Ryan Field, and would feature a canopy designed to keep noise and light focused on the field. It will also include cutting-edge technology and scoreboards, as well as concessions with food from local restaurants, and would achieve gold LEED certification. Now, if I'm Northwestern, I would be contacting the Chicago Bears immediately to see if they could play games there. They play games at Wrigley Field in the past, and yeah, that's a fun thing to do once in a while, but you really need a football stadium, not playing football in a baseball stadium or a temporary structure on a soccer field. Now we've seen how this has happened in the past with Vanderbilt, how they're building their new stadium. Every opponent that plays there says they hate it, because, you know, construction's in the background. I mean, the scoreboard at one point when Vanderbilt was building their new stadium was held up, by two cranes in the end zone. So if you have a venue like that, that is not ready to really host a game, why wouldn't you try to be like, go to a closer pro stadium? Like, Vanderbilt could have gone to the Titans and be like, hey, can we rent out the field from you guys? Northwestern can go Chicago Bears. Hey, can we rent out the field from you guys? We've seen that it's possible with USC and the LA Rams co-hosting games on the at the LA Coliseum for a while. You know, the Oakland Raiders and the Oakland Athletics co-hosted games. We've had more recently the Steelers and the Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh actually share the same facility and the same field. So it can happen. It can be a shared space. So I don't know why they wouldn't do that rather than to have some sort of structure that they haven't even built yet with an undetermined capacity that is on a soccer field, not even a football field, but a soccer field. So it'll be interesting to see how that all works out and if they try to reach out to other stadiums to rent out space, like I said. I think that that would be the smartest thing for them to do. But then again, I'm not in charge. Now, next we have Super Bowl champion Sammy Watkins. Heads nine named to the Clemson Athletic Hall of Fame. The school announced the entire group this week, which includes Sammy Watkins and Taj Boyd, who is Sammy Watkins' quarterback at Clemson and was the 2012 ACC Player of the Year. Now, Sammy Watkins played at Clemson from 2011 to 2013, and he finished with 240 catches for 3,391 yards and 27 touchdowns. The others that were selected to the Hall of Fame for Clemson were basketball's Luis Greenwood, baseball's Michael Johnson, rowing's Jessica Lediker, soccer's Mark Lisi, volleyball's Julie Rodriguez, and track and field's Victor Smalls and Stephanie Weichert. So two from track and field. Now, the group will be inducted on November the 2nd. And it's interesting because Sammy Watkins was one of those guys that coming out of college, you thought he was the next big thing when it came to wide receivers. You thought he would be – I thought he would be a surefire Hall of Famer watching him day by day. But his career, although it was a good career, it was not what experts were expecting. He was selected fourth overall in the NFL draft by Buffalo, and he did spend some quality years there in Buffalo. And he was with Kansas City in the 2019 season, which ended with a 31-20 Super Bowl win over San Francisco, in which he had five catches for 98 yards in that game. But his career is one of those that's like, it's a what if. Like I said, still a good, solid career. But he's not a bust by any means. He's a great wide receiver, a good producer. But it kind of tugs at you like he didn't meet expectations coming out of college. And maybe those expectations were unfair. You see a lot of times that a player coming out of college, they already compare them to NFL Hall of Famers, and they haven't even started a game on the field. So you lead to, you know, expectations that can never really be met because they're unreasonable. But Sammy Watkins, solid wide receiver, selected to the Clemson Athletics Hall of Fame. Congratulations to him, Taj Boyd, Lewis Greenwood, Michael Johnson, Jessica Leidecker, Mark Lisi, Julie Rodriguez, Victor Smalls, and Stephanie Weichert. Congratulations on being selected to the Clemson Athletic Hall of Fame. And I hope you enjoy that evening on November 2nd where all y'all are inducted. Next, we have the AAC Commissioner Tim Parnetti saying that college football playoff expansion is encouraging and there's room for more growth. He is the new commissioner of the American Athletic Conference, taking over for the for a retiring person from that position. He was hired last week, and the 53, Pernetti said that he wants the conference to take, quote, big swings and is not interested in chasing the status of certain labels that are now more nebulous than ever in college sports. He also said he won't be using terms like Power Five or Group Five, which has become the way to kind of separate the conferences a bit from that main group of conferences that really have a realistic shot at national championship and then the outside looking in. Pernetti says, when I look at college football, to me, college football is college football. Are there different levels of competition and levels of play? Of course there are, he said. Is there a financial disparity? We know that. We don't control a lot of that stuff, but I will try to focus on with the staff and what the schools is what do we control? What is the stomach for taking some big swings? Now, the 10 Bulls Division Conference Commissioners, the Group of Five, and then the Power Five commissioners are all part of the, along with Notre Dame's athletic director, which I think is weird. They're the only independent school with the athletic director that's on the college football playoffs board of managers. UConn's athletic director not on there, but I digress. It's the 10 bowl subdivision commissioners plus Notre Dame's athletic director on their board of managers. And the American Conference has been the strongest of the non-power conferences during the last 10 years, really. Seven times the AAC has produced the highest-ranked Group of Five champion in the playoff rankings at the end of the season. And then, of course, we had that 1 year in 2021 where Cincinnati, an AAC team at the time, now in the Big 12, became the only non-power conference team to play in the college football playoff semifinals. And then speaking of the expansion to 12 teams next year and 14 teams in 2026, Pernetti said, I actually think the evolution of the postseason in college football is encouraging because there's more access and there's more slots. But there's 134 institutions playing FBS football, and as the college football playoff continues to grow and evolve, I think there's room for more. He did say he's not sure what the right number of teams is for the college football playoff, but he believes that more postseason opportunities could be added to enhance or complement the current playoff or bowl system. He went on to say that our coaches need to be able to look the kids in the eye and explain to them, based on certain results, that we can compete for a national championship, Pernetti said. He said he's not naive to think that realignment will ever end, but I do think there's a window ahead of us to do things differently and, quite frankly, resource this conference in a way where members don't need to leave to be successful, he said. He also talked about the possibility of the conference being involved in compensating athletes for name, image, and likeness as a way to help retain top talent. And looking into non-traditional forms of revenue generation, such as private equity. Speaking on the private equity part, he said that private equity has been heavily investing in sports for an extended period of time already. And it's like circling the neighborhood in college sports, but it hasn't parked its car at anyone's driveway yet, Pernetti said. I think that's inevitable. Now, what he's saying about private equity is not allowed right now under the NIL rules. So while I agree with him and I think that's coming eventually, it would take a rule change in order for that to happen. I do agree with him that while expanding the playoff gives more teams that are outside of the Power Five and Notre Dame, since they're considered one of them, even though they're not, gives them more of a shot, gives them a fair shot, because all they have to do is win their conference, and boom, you're in. If you're one of the top-ranked conference champions, boom, you're in. So it's not – I'm glad that it's not a situation where you have to have somebody vote on these teams getting in. Now, they will if they're part of the wild card positions, if they're not a conference champion, which I think needs to be changed. I don't think there needs to be any voting on how someone gets in whatsoever, even if it's just for a wild card spot, because the bias is out there. But I agree with him that I think that giving more spots gives more teams a chance. And I'm glad. Because you've seen in the past, Cincinnati had to go undefeated. I mean, it was like 3 years in a row before they realistically. No, it was UCF went undefeated 2 years in a row, and then they claimed their national title in 2017, and then the committee was like, "Oh, okay, if they're gonna do that, then we should probably let a team in." If possible, if they're in an AAC, if possible, let them in if they're undefeated, because otherwise they'll just claim a national title like UCF did. And then that led to Cincinnati being in 2021, and they got absolutely destroyed by Alabama. Now, many people use this example as a way to say, okay, well, we see what happens when a group of five team gets selected in the playoff, they're going to get blown out. Well, blowouts happen all the time in the college football playoff. I mean, just going down the list, the one that stands out the most part is the national title game between Georgia and TCU. And that was between two Power Five teams. So I hate the argument that because one team got blown out, that you shouldn't even look at teams from Group of Five as having a chance. Because we see it all the time in March Madness on the basketball side of things, that you'll have one team like NC State. NC State was 18-14 coming into the ACC tournament, won all their games in the ACC tournament, won the ACC. Then they go into NCAA tournament play. Nobody gives them a shot, and they made it all the way to the Final Four with 14 losses, which is not very common for a basketball team. Now, that's a case of a team who got a shot because of how many spots there were, was able to get hot at the right time and prove to critics that it's not always going to be the same teams beating down on each other all the time. And I hope to see that sort of parity come to college football playoff. I don't want to see Alabama winning it every year. I don't want to see as much as I respect Kirby Smart and UGA as a football team, I don't want to see them and Alabama duking it out every year to decide who's champions. That's boring. Why would you want to see the same two teams over and over and over and over and over and over? No, I want some party to it. I want different teams in. I want to be able to, I want to be able to see different teams in there having a chance at being able to be like, okay, this is our 1 year. We've got all our seniors together. We've got a really solid program. Let's see if we can go for a national title game before we have to rebuild again. So I agree with what he's saying there. But I think if you go past 16 teams, you're really going to have an issue of, is this team that I'm putting in worthy of a title shot? Because if you looked at the, if you look at the top 25 from last year, once you started getting into past 16, it was like 3 loss teams, 4 loss teams, a handful of 5 loss teams, if they were SEC teams, all the way to the out the top 25. So I don't think that every team in the top 25 should get a shot. So I disagree with him there. But I understand that he's trying to give his conference the best shot possible, and that would give his conference the best shot possible. But then again, that just opens it up for more teams from the big conferences to get in. So it'd be interesting to see how that goes forward, if we see more group of five teams getting an actual shot in this system, or if it's just like it's always been and we're going to see the same 2 or 3 teams battle it out year after year. Boring, boring, boring. I certainly hope not. I certainly hope that there is some parity going forward. Next we have Wisconsin football will host Marshall during the 2028 season, the 20th anniversary of their first and last meeting. Wisconsin and Marshall will face each other in 2028 at Wisconsin's Camp Randall Stadium, and the game will take place on September 2nd, 2028, and is scheduled to serve as the team opener for both teams. Wisconsin and Marshall, like I said, both played each other 20 years ago in 2008, and Wisconsin beat the Thundering Herd 51-14 at Madison in 2008. Marshall also has upcoming games with Big Ten teams at Ohio State this year and at Penn State in 2026. So it'll be interesting to see if the Thundering Herd can maybe get in there, get an upset, get one for the little guys. And then you have Arkansas announcing that they will open up their season on a Thursday night when it faces Arkansas Pine Bluff on August 29th. They'll open their season on a Thursday night in Little Rock, Arkansas. Now, school officials had announced a Friday night for this date, which was going to air on ESPN, but then scheduling with ESPN kind of worked out to where they had to play on Thursday, and it will now be a primetime game. It's the first time that Arkansas has opened its season on a Thursday night since 2017, when the Razorbacks defeated Florida A&M 49-7. Arkansas and Arkansas Pine Bluff have faced each other once before, where Arkansas won 45-3 in 2021 in Little Rock. And next we have some retirement news. Rowan football coach Jay Accorsi is retiring after 22 seasons and 4 trips to the NCAA Division III Final Four. Jay Accorsi, the Rowan University football program's all-time leader in victories, has announced his retirement. The Division III school in South New Jersey announced the retirement, and there was no mention of who would replace him. Now, this is interesting because it's in the spring, and they're still trying to find a head coach. Accorsi posted a 143-78 record with 7 shared or outright New Jersey Athletic Conference titles and 7 appearances in the NCAA Division III Championship playoffs. The Profs advanced to the NCAA semifinals in 2004 and 05 and reached the quarterfinals in 06. His team had a 500 or better record 17 times, including the past 2 seasons, and he had an overall record of 103-54 in New Jersey Athletic Conference games. Now, of course, he received New Jersey Athletic Conference Coach of the Year honors 5 times. That would be 2014, 2013, 2005, 2004, and 2002, and earned the Maxwell Football Club Tri-State Coach of the Year Award in 2005. So it'll be interesting to see if Rowan University can find a replacement there in time to have a good football program in the fall. Next, we have that the NCAA could okay new transfer eligibility rules at their next meeting. The NCAA Division I Council could adopt legislation for a new transfer rule that would allow all undergraduate athletes to transfer and play immediately if they meet specific academic requirements and would not limit the number of times an athlete can transfer. Athletes would still have 2 transfer windows during the season and would not be able to transfer mid-year and play for a second school in the same season. In December, the NCAA proposed this policy in reaction to a West Virginia judge's ruling that intended to stop the organization from enforcing its bylaw, barring athletes from transferring multiple times and playing right away unless they had an NCAA waiver. The NCAA agreed to terms on a preliminary injunction that runs through at least through the end of the academic year. Previously, the NCAA's one-time transfer rule allowed athletes to play immediately at the first school they transferred to, but then they had to sit out a year if they transferred again or apply to the NCAA for a waiver to compete immediately. In January, the U.S. Department of Justice joined the lawsuit against the NCAA's transfer rules, which argues the limitations on transfers violate antitrust law. According to the amended complaint for injunctive relief filed in January, the NCAA's transfer bylaw unjustifiably restrains the ability of these college athletes to engage in the market for their labor as NCAA Division I college athletes. Now this is interesting because I actually agree that they should pass this. Because previously, you either had to sit out a whole year after your second time transferring, or you had to apply to a waiver from the NCAA. The problem was the NCAA was kind of picky and choosy on who they would grant waivers to. If you were a big name in college football, if you made them a crap ton of money, then they would instantly approve that waiver like overnight. But if nobody really knew who you were, then they would deny it. Like there's a very good case right about this where in the same season, 2 players transferred out of Georgia. One player transferred to Syracuse because he wanted his grandfather to see him play before he died because he was sick. He asked the NCAA for a waiver. They did not grant it to him. The other player transfers out, gets his waiver granted to him because he was a big name. Now, I don't see why you have to depend on the NCAA who could pick and choose who they want to be able to play after their second transfer, where they have to look at, does this guy make money for us? Where is he going? Is he going to be competitive on a competitive team? Yeah, and then you have the athletes sitting there wondering if they're going to play or not. Until the NCAA says yay or nay. I don't think that the NCAA should have outright power like that to say, no, you cannot play, or yes, you can play. So I think that this rule, if it's approved, will be a good rule. Now, they will be meeting to discuss this on April 17th and 18th. So we will know within the week when this will be approved. That actually looks like that's going to be Wednesday and Thursday of this week. So we should know by the next episode whether or not they're going to approve that or not. Then we have the NCAA eyeing a consumer protection system in the NILH. NCAA President Charlie Baker said he's focused on creating a consumer protection system for collegiate athletes and their families so they can have a better understanding of name, image, and likeness deals that are legitimate and those that are fraudulent. Baker, who spoke to reporters prior to the start of the national championship game Monday, said a multitude of athletes are basing NIL decisions on limited information about the legitimacy of the companies and sponsors courting them. One piece, which they've been working on for a while, is that we call a consumer pack. We call a consumer protection package, Baker said. For the first time, some semblance of what the market looks like so that the student athletes and their families can have some idea about whether or not what somebody's promising they're telling them is actually legit or illegal. The second piece is to create almost like a Yelp or a TripAdvisor that will give student athletes the ability to talk about third parties that do right by them and third parties that don't. I think it's unfortunate for the most part that whole space is kind of anonymous, and I think that puts, again, kids and families in a tough spot. He also commented on the Super League proposal that we talked about last week on the show that would separate the top 70 schools in college sports and eliminate conferences by saying that schools should have the authority to make decisions on that concept. Schools alone should have the authority, not an outside third party. Now, I think that is interesting because if we're going school by school, that proposal will probably never pass. If it needs every single school to agree, because there's just so many schools that if their rival agrees to something, instantly they're going to say no. Like, first thing that comes to mind is Ohio State and Michigan. If Michigan says they're for something, Ohio State is immediately against it. If Ohio State's for something, Michigan's immediately against it. So I think that if what he's saying is true, if he's saying that that will be the way it's gone about, then it pretty much never pass. Then we see the Nebraska AD foreseeing a performance-based revenue distribution model. New Nebraska Athletic Director Troy Dannon expects revenue distribution in college sports to become much more performance-based over time, resulting in an eat-what-you-kill model. Now, he was hired after less than 6 months with Washington, after they became an open spot in Nebraska. He told ESPN that the future model for the college football playoff mirrors what will happen around the greater collegiate athletics landscape. He said that there's going to be some meritocracy versus more of a social approach to revenue distribution. You'll eventually see that within leagues. You'll eventually see that across sports, maybe other than football. And eat what you kill, in some respects, that mentality. It's going to be much more performance-based and outcomes when it comes to generating the revenue necessary to compete. The college football playoff decisions that have been made so far show that. Now, I think this is interesting for him to say, considering that Nebraska has never made the college football playoff. I mean, they were dominant in the 90s. They won 3 national titles in the 90s, and they won 22 Big Ten titles from 1963 to 1999. But this is a team who last qualified for a bowl game in 2016, and has quite frankly been an embarrassment for the Big Ten since then. It's funny that it's coming out of his mouth that this is what it will look like, because Nebraska has not looked like a team who would succeed in this module. Now, they are looking to improve under Matt Rhule. He didn't do a very good job at the Panthers, but he did manage to turn around Baylor. So we'll be looking out to see if Nebraska can turn around to maybe give these words more bite. But right now, it's just like that little chihuahua nipping at your heels, trying to prove they're tough when they haven't really done anything. Next, we have that the Ohio State staff has not named a starting quarterback after the spring game. Ohio State coach Ryan Day and offensive coordinator Chip Kelly said the Buckeyes are still not ready to name a starting quarterback coming out of Saturday's spring game. The trouble of finding a QB has come after Kyle McCord, who started at quarterback for the Buckeyes last season, transferred to Syracuse in December. Kansas State transfer Will Howard is battling junior Devin Brown and 5-star freshman Julian Sayan, who originally signed with Alabama before enrolling at Ohio State. Sophomore Lincoln Kineholz and freshman Air Noland also got snaps in the spring game. So it looks like they're spreading snaps around to 5 different quarterbacks, and really don't exactly know which of those 5 is going to be a starter. Although I would say it was probably going to be one of the main 3 that were mentioned. Will Howard, started 12 games for Kansas State last season, completing 9 of 13 passes for 77 yards Saturday. However, Devin Brown passed threw the only touchdown pass of the spring game. But freshman Julian Sayan finished the game with a game-high passing of 85 yards, but he also threw a pick 6. Chip Kelly said that the coaching staff would review film of the spring game and continue their evaluation of the quarterback competition, but added that the Buckeyes didn't have an exact timetable of when they would pick a starter. He said that you would always want to do it earlier, but I also believe every time I've been involved in this, it kind of happens organically and authentically because the players know. The players understand who they feel is the guy, and most of the time the decision is very obvious. To me, the decision is already obvious. You should start the guy that transferred to you. I mean, he started 13 games last year. He proved he can be a starter. Give him a ball. Give him a chance. But, you know, again, I'm not the one in charge. Then we have UNLV and Barry Odom agreeing to a 5-year contract extension. UNLV signed its second-year football coach Barry Odom to a 5-year contract on this week after he led the Rebels to one of the most successful seasons in program history. He led the Rebels to a 9-5 record last season, which is the most victories in the program since 1984. And UNLV played in the Mountain West Championship for the first time last year, and competed in its first bowl in 10 years, losing 49-36 to Kansas in the Guaranteed Rate Bowl in Phoenix. The Mountain West named Odom its Coach of the Year, which is the first time that a UNLV coach has received that honor since John Robinson in 2000 led the Rebels to the Las Vegas Bowl. Now, the 47-year-old Odom will receive a base salary of $400,000 each year, and he will also earn a total package of at least $1.75 million next season, matching his salary from last season and reportedly making him the highest paid coach in the Mountain West. His total compensation rises to at least $2.4 million by 2028, and UNLV will pay him retention bonuses of $200,000 in March 2026 and $200,000 in March 2028, as well as $100,000 in February 2029 to keep him around. I think this is a great move by them, especially the retention bonuses, so he has incentive to stay around even if he continues to succeed and get eyes from other programs. He'll have that monetary reason to be like, well, I really want to coach somewhere else, somewhere better, but I have this retention bonus to think about. I think I'm going to stay here. I think it's a great decision by UNLV, and I hope they continue to succeed. Now we've arrived to the arrests around college football section. Headed off with ex-Texas Longhorns defensive lineman Tavondre Sweat arrested for DWI. The 2023 Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year and the Outland Trophy winner was booked into jail after an arrest for driving while intoxicated. Sweat, 22, was booked Sunday afternoon into Travis County Jail, according to online records, after being arrested by Austin police. He faces a Class B misdemeanor, which in Texas carries up a fine up to $2,000 and 180 days in jail. Police said Sweat was driving a Ford Bronco when he was hit from behind, causing him to lose control, veer off onto a service road, and roll the car onto its side. When Austin police responded to a crash between an SUV and a sedan at 4:41 a.m. Sunday at Interstate 35, they arrested Sweat for driving while intoxicated, while the driver of the sedan left the scene on foot immediately after the crash. Now, that other driver was ID'd as current Texas linebacker Samaje Burrell. And according to the police report, Burrell was driving a 2020 Dodge sports car when he collided with Sweat's car. The report says that later in the day at about 5:45 p.m., Burrell's father, Lorenzo Burrell, who is a Fort Worth police officer, called Austin police, although information about the call is redacted. Sweat's blood alcohol was measured at 0.105 while in custody at 6:08 a.m., according to a police affidavit, with the legal limit in Texas being 0.08. Texas coach Steve Sarkisian said that Wednesday that Burrell has been suspended. And he said that we're aware of the situation involving Samaje Burrell and have suspended him indefinitely from all team activities for conduct detrimental to the program, Sarkisian said in a statement. Now, it's unclear whether Burrell, who is a second-year player from Fort Worth, Texas, and didn't play last season while redshirting, although he was a four-star recruit in the class of 2023, it wasn't clear whether Burrell would face charges for leaving the scene of the accident. He has not been charged yet, but he was identified. So I'm unsure of whether he faces charges as of right now. He has not been arrested, so I'm not going to report that. Sweat was released from jail after posting bond, and his attorney declined to comment on the incident when asked by KXAN-TV. The 6'4", 362-pound Sweat declared for the NFL draft after helping Texas to its first college football playoff appearance, where he had 2 sacks, 8 tackles for losses, 7 quarterback hurries, 4 pass breakups, and 45 total tackles last season. He also won the Outland Trophy, like I mentioned, as the nation's top interior lineman. Now, if you're either of those young men, number one, Burrell, why would you leave the scene of the accident? You've done nothing illegal up to that point. You might get a ticket, but up to that point, you have done nothing illegal. and sweat, why are you driving drunk, man? You know you're a top prospect in the draft. You know you're probably going to get, if you get caught drunk and while, if you get arrested for something like this, which you did, you know your draft stock is probably going to plummet, which means that your signing bonus is probably going to plummet. Why do it? Call an Uber. Call a taxi. I can't stand these top athletes that have everything in the world when it comes to athleticism, but they can't think through situations like this. I mean, you've got everything in the world going for you. You're fixing to be in the National Football League. And now you got to have it shrouded by this. And Burrell, too, he made a mistake, too. He should not have left the scene of the accident. He should have stayed there and received his punishment like a man. It's just ridiculous that we have to keep going over athletes driving irresponsibly. We've got another one here. Another person driving irresponsibly. SMU having to suspend wide receiver Teddy Knox for his role in the Rashee Rice crash. Now, if you don't know about the Rashee Rice situation, the Kansas City, he's a receiver with Kansas City Chiefs, and he caused a chain reaction crash from driving way too fast. I mean, it was about five or six cars, I think, in the video. And before police got there, he just walked away. Like, no big deal. Like, he hadn't done anything wrong. He just walked away. And now it's coming out that SMU wide receiver Teddy Knox has been suspended after being identified as the second driver, along with Rashee Rice, who caused that crash. The university said in the statement that SMU take these allegations seriously, and federal student privacy laws to prevent the university from discussing details involving student disciplinary proceedings. Now, getting back to the crash, Rashee Rice was driving a Lamborghini sports car when the crash occurred, and right now he faces 8 charges from this incident, including aggravated assault, which is a felony. Now, he has turned himself in. He's 23. He's turned himself in at the Glen Heights Police Department on warrants charging him with 1 count of aggravated assault, 1 count of collision involving serious bodily harm, and 6 counts of collision involving injury. So 8 counts total, 1 of the aggravated assault, 6 of collision involving injury, and then 1 of collision involving serious bodily injury. Now, he did not check on anybody else during this crash. As soon as he was able to walk off, he walked off. Didn't check on anybody else. Didn't concern himself with whether somebody was hurt from something he did. Nope, just walked off. Now, arrest warrants were issued on the same exact charges for Knox, who was 21. He was driving the other speeding sports car. This one was a Corvette. But he is not in custody yet, and he has not he hasn't turned himself in, so the warrants are out for his arrest. Now, his attorney, DeAndre Grant, says, "We have fully cooperated with law enforcement. Other than that, we have no further comment at this time." Well, no, you haven't fully cooperated, because if you fully cooperated, you turn yourself in. They wouldn't have to issue a warrant and come get your sorry butt if you're cooperating. You'd already be there. So that's a lie. Police said that the drivers, the Corvette, and the Lamborghini were speeding in the far left lane March 30th when they lost control and the Lamborghini traveled onto the shoulder and hit the center median wall, causing the chain collision. The crash involved the Lamborghini, a Corvette, and here we go, 4 other vehicles, and left 4 people with minor injuries, police have said. Police said the drivers of the Corvette and Lamborghini left following the crash, so they both left. without determining anyone needing medical attention or providing their information. So they could have popped them with a leaving the scene of an accident, too. I don't see that on their charges, but they could have. I'm just think it through. I mean, how can you not think that the police will find you if you hit and run and you just walk away? I don't care if anybody's hurt from what I did. It's selfishness. It's arrogance. And I can't understand why, again, people who have all the talent in the world throwing it away because they want to go vroom vroom in their sports car. You have all your life to do that. Quit throwing away talent for being a stupid person. It's ridiculous. Then we have the worst of these arrests, I think, with Washington's Tybo Rogers being charged on 2 rape allegations. Washington running back Tybo Rogers was arrested this week and charged with 2 instances of rape that allegedly took place during the 2023 college football season. He was charged with 2nd and 3rd degree rape and posted bail of $150,000, according to Seattle police. He will be arraigned on April 18th. And I'm checking that calendar. So he'll be arraigned on Thursday. Now, here's where the story gets interesting. Washington Athletics said in a statement that the University of Washington Intercollegiate Athletic Department is aware of the arrest of a student athlete by the Seattle Police Department, and the student athlete has been suspended from all team activities until further notice. The UW will continue to gather facts and cooperate with law enforcement as requested. Now, again, here's where things get interesting. He was suspended from team activities near the end of November and did not travel with the team for the Pac-12 championship on December 1st, according to a certification for determination of probable cause document written by a Seattle police detective. So these accusations were made while Washington's going on its great run. But he did appear in the college football playoff semifinal and championship games. So you're telling me that there's probable cause for your player to be arrested on rape, so you suspend him for the championship game of the conference championship game, but then a week later he's good to go to the semifinal and the national title game with the same accusation being over his back? How does that make sense? And then, according to the document, one of the women, which is a University of Washington student, reported her assault to the university's Title IX office on November 28th. It also says that there are multiple emails sent within the University of Washington Athletic Department confirming Rogers should be taken off the travel roster for the Pac-12 championship games. But none of the emails contain information for why Rogers should not travel to the game. So it was like the university was kind of tiptoeing around the fact that one of their players has been accused of rape because they didn't want to. I mean, how can you do that? It said that there was also text messages referencing Rogers and questions being asked about what was going on with him by different people, including Rogers' father, the detective wrote. He concluded, based on the proximity to when Title IX report was filed, that the suspension was related to the allegation. So the suspension of the Pac-12 game, where he could not travel, was related to the allegation. So they knew of the allegation and still allowed him to play in the title game. I mean, that's just ridiculous. They allowed him to play after they knew. But then UW coach Jed Fish, who was hired in January to replace Kalen DeBoer, said that as soon as he found out about the allegations, they suspended him indefinitely from the program. The first alleged rape happened in late October. So there was one before the November 28th accusation, where Rogers met the woman, a student at Seattle Central Community College, on Tinder, and the assault took place inside her apartment, after which she immediately reported it to her mother, who took her to a local hospital for a SANE exam, which is a sexual assault nurse examiner exam. She then reported it to law enforcement on October 28th. Rogers met the second woman, the UW student, at a Halloween party before connecting on Tinder a short time later. After she invited Rogers to her apartment, she told police, he was almost immediately forceful with her. And after the sexual assault, the woman told police she experienced redness and soreness on multiple places on her body. On November 28th, after the second woman reported her assault to UW's Title IX office, police said Rogers called her. He called her, asking her why she was accusing him of all this. He called the victim. The woman has since felt the need to drop out of school and move back with her parents to support her medically and emotionally, according to the police. Now, all of this is to say, Washington knew about this allegation. They knew about the possible rape. They allowed him to play in the national title game. They allowed him to play in the semifinal game. I'm unsure of Kalen DeBoer's involvement. I don't want to speak on that because I don't know. But it is interesting to see that immediately after, the new Washington head coach knew something about it, he immediately suspended the guy. Now, he's been arrested for second and third degree rape, be arraigned on Thursday, and is another case of a guy throwing away his career by doing something stupid. I mean, as a freshman in 2023, he rushed 44 times for 184 yards and had 6 receptions for 72 yards. He was a 3-star recruit out of California's Bakersfield High School in the class of 2023. He could have had a bright future ahead of him. But instead, he decided that he wanted to rape girls. So I hope he rots in prison. Then you have O.J. Simpson recently, the murderer of his wife Nicole, finally dying of cancer. And I hope that in a final act of justice from Nicole, that he is denied entry at the pearly gates. Because that is not a man that deserves to be granted entrance to heaven. That's how I wanted to ended the arrest segment. Just put that segment about O.J. Simpson on there because that's how he should be remembered, as a criminal and not a hero, as some people remember him. But now let's move on to some lighter aspects of college football. We had two spring games recently. We had the Georgia Tech spring game and the Georgia spring game. For the Georgia Tech spring game, Team Swarm won 27-24 over Team Wreck'em in their spring game, where plenty of guys got a chance to flash their ability. There are plenty of highlights. Aiden Burr nailed a 62-yard field goal. Zach Pyron threw a Hail Mary touchdown to end the first half. And guys like Chris Elko, Zion Taylor, and other guys got a chance to shine. both freshman quarterbacks that the Jackets have recruited. They showcased their talent as well. And all started was first on the field was Yellow Jackets' number one offense against the number two defense. And it looked like Georgia Tech's offense was picked right up where they were at the end of the season. They moved the ball right down the field. Jamal Haynes was a workhorse in this game. He moved the ball right down the field for the Yellow Jackets. Jamal Haynes had some big runs. And Haynes King found Malik Rutherford for a big third down conversion and got Team Swarm into the end zone to start the game. Team Reckham got the ball next, and Zach Pyron was in at quarterback. But the offense stalled out pretty quickly and was forced to punt back to Team Swarm, where after Team Reckham got the ball again, Aiden Burr came to attempt a 62-yard field goal, nailed the kick, and he came in last year replacing... He wasn't the starter to start the season. He came in replacing Gavin Stewart after a few bad games by Stewart and became one of the most consistent kickers in the ACC and proved why he should keep a spot in this spring game. The first turnover of the game came when Haynes King pass was tipped by safety Tay Seymour and intercepted by Case Adams. Now, Gavin Stewart did kick a field goal at the end of the first quarter, but he missed it. Then we had Jamal Haynes had 6 carries for 44 yards in the first quarter, while Haynes King was 4 of 7 for 48 yards, and Pyron was 3 of 6 for 32 yards, and the leading receiver for either team was Eric Singleton Jr., who had 1 catch for 15 yards. Now, to start off the second quarter, Team Swarm marched down the field, and there was another efficient drive with Haynes King quarterback. He drove the ball down the field, found Malik Rutherford for a touchdown. And during this touchdown, Malik Rutherford actually broke a few tackles and looked pretty shifty on that reception to give Team Swarm a 14-3 lead. And then true freshman quarterback Aaron Filo, who was recruited from Prince Avenue. I actually watched a bunch of Aaron Filo's games in preparation to see him play at Tech, and I think he's a great quarterback. I think he'll do great things at Tech if he stays there. He got in the next series at quarterback. Didn't fare too well in his first outing, where his drive ended with a sack by Kevin Harris. But in his second drive, Filo looked more comfortable. I think he was just nervous the first time out there, but the second time out there, he looked comfortable. He looked like he was in his groove. And he found he threw an absolute bomb to wide receiver Zion Taylor, but as it turns out, the offense had called a timeout right before, so the play was kind of waved off. But nonetheless, it was still good to see Filo's arm shown off. And then immediately after that timeout, he was under duress, looked like he was going to get sacked, but he was able to find somebody. He was able to find Bailey Stockton on the run for a big game that got them into the red zone, and then found Abdul Janae for a touchdown that cut the lead to 14-10. And then Zach Pyron took over for Team Swarm. They only had 17 seconds to try to score before the half. Where Pyron found tight end Rylan Goad for a reception and then rolled to his left and heaved the ball for a Hail Mary, which was caught by Chris Alko for a 54-yard touchdown in the half. It was a fantastic play. And at the half, Haynes King was 11 for 15 for 99 yards. Zach Pyron was 4 for 7 for 89 yards, including that 54-yard bomb. And Aaron Filo finished the first half with going 2 for 3 for 40 yards and a touchdown. Jamal Haynes still led all rushers with 44 yards on 6 carries, but Evan Dickens had 4 carries for 22 yards, and Trey Cooley had 5 for 23 yards. Malik Rutherford had 5 catches for 50 yards. Stockton had 2 catches for 41 yards. Janae had 3 catches for 31 yards and a touchdown. Goad had 3 receptions for 25 yards, and Eric Singleton Jr. had 2 catches for 30 yards. Now, after halftime, another freshman quarterback, Graham Knowles, made his Georgia Tech debut. It kind of looked ugly on his first drive. I mean, his first pass was nearly intercepted, and then he threw an interception. Then he threw an incompletion on third down that looked pretty ugly. It looked like a duck. So then Zach Pyron would go back in, and he found Elko for 2 big catches. And then he ended up throwing a touchdown pass to Leo Blackburn. And then taking over for Graham Knowles was Brody Rhodes, who got his opportunity at quarterback for the first time. And he showed off his athleticism, actually, by ripping off a couple of pretty good runs. and a couple big runs before Rodney Shelley was able to break up a pass of his in the end zone on third down. And then after it being fourth down, Team Rackham decided to go for it. Rhodes threw a pass in the end zone, but it was intercepted by Warren Burrell. Then you had Knowles take over for his second drive of the game, and he looked much more comfortable in his second drive. He found Blackburn and Elko to get past midfield, and then the third quarter ended with Blackburn picking up a first down and moving closer to scoring, but the drive wouldn't eventually stall out. But he did look – Graham Knowles did look a lot more comfortable in his second outing. Aaron Filo was back in at quarterback at the other end, and he led another impressive drive. He found Stockton for a huge gain to get him in the opposing territory. And then he threw another touchdown pass to end the drive to Zion Taylor in the corner of the end zone. And then Ben Guthrie on the other for Team Swarm took over again and got the team down the field, once again making plays with his legs and connecting with Zion Taylor. And that's how the game ended. Team Swarm won the day, won 27-24. Haynes King finished 11 of 15 for 99 yards. Zach Pyron threw for 162 yards on 8 of 14 passing. Graham Knowles was 6 for 11 for 69 yards passing. Aaron Filo was 6 of 9 for 120 yards. Ben Guthrie was 4 of 7 for 57 yards. And Rhodes was 1 of 5 for 9 yards. So looking at this, I think that Filo won the third string job, which for him being a true freshman is a pretty big deal. I mean, Zach Pyron's been the backup last year. I'll probably be the backup again this year, but Aaron Filo, once Haynes King is gone, probably going to make a case for being a starter over Pyron. Now, Elko led everyone in receiving with 136 yards on 4 catches. Stockton had 93 yards on 3 catches, and Taylor had 71 yards on 3 catches. All 3 guys looked pretty good. And then as far as defensively, Nico Dowell had 5 catches. Freshman linebacker Taj Butler had 4 tackles. and Jackson Hamilton and E.J. Lightsley each had four. Warren Burrell and Case Adams each had an interception as well. Now, watching this game, I think Coach Brentke mixed and matched backups with starters in this game pretty well to give the young guys some experience while working out the older guys as well. The biggest takeaway I have from this game is that the Yellow Jackets finally have some capable players deep on their depth chart, which hasn't been the case the past three seasons. The past three seasons, if a guy got injured, his backup was not very good. So we're going to see the Yellow Jackets finally have some depth going on in their depth chart. Key said after Team Swarm beat Team Wreckham, that's the name of the game in college football, is to constantly be working to build the depth of your football team. The last place I was before here, and I can talk about him now because he's retired with Nick Saban, you build your roster and you want to build the roster from the bottom up. You continue to improve through competition all around. I think we saw that today with the depth that we are starting to build. We're a long, long way where we want to be, but I think you're starting to see that depth show itself. And it wasn't all... Now, the spring game wasn't all good for Tech. Key made sure to say that there were times when the pocket was collapsing pretty strongly because of inadequate blocking by the offensive line. And he said he liked the way... But he did say he liked the way defenders rallied to the ball early in the game, but that there needed to be more depth on that unit. So it looks like two things that they're going to need to work on before the season start is one, pass blocking, and two, defense. We saw the defense struggle last year. Offensive line was great last year, but we did see the defense struggle last year. It looks like they're still trying to figure things out on that. And we'll see. We'll have to wait till fall to see if it works out. Then we had the Georgia spring game where the red team took on the black team where Carson Beck did not look too comfortable. He threw a pair of interceptions. Threw one interception to linebacker C.J. Allen and another to defensive end Michael Williams, who did tip the ball to himself, but that's still going to count against Carson Beck. But red team wide receiver Dominic Lovett had a big first half, recording four catches for 73 yards. And red team wide receiver Colby Young, a transfer from Miami, hauled in a pair of first-half catches, including a contested catch touchdown. Black team running back Andrew Paul had a touchdown, and black team wide receiver Anthony Evans also made several big plays. Kirby Smart said after the first half that he liked a lot more about the defense. The defense is playing with a little more energy than the offense. And in the second half, running backs Roderick Robinson and Andrew Paul would put on a strong showing in the second half. Early enrollee Sakovi White hauled in a 26-yard touchdown pass from Gunnar Stockton. And both teams kind of traded field goals in the second half before Carson Beck completed an incredible touchdown pass to Dominic Lovett to tie the game 20-20. And that's where it would end. The G-Day game would end in a tie 20-20. Some of the main highlights of the game were Carson Beck connecting with Dylan Bell on a 22-yard pass play and another to a deep bomb to Dominic Lovett that I just talked about that tied the game. Gunnar Stockton found Anthony Evans on a 54-yard pass play and Nitro Tuggle on a 32-yard pass play. And like I said, C.J. Allen and Micah Williams both had interceptions, with Williams tipping the ball to himself. So that is how both spring games would end up. We'll have to see. We'll have to wait to fall to see how these squads will be able to take their momentum from the spring game and how they will look going forward. That is going to be all for me in this episode. I want to thank you all for listening. And make sure to follow our Facebook and Instagram page. Thank you.